Welcome everyone to, is that coming through? Okay. Welcome everyone to the session DNSSEC for everybody, a beginner session. We'll start in just a few minutes, but please come in. I would urge you to take seats at this table. This is a very interactive session. We really want people to participate. We're not going to have enough seats if people don't sit at the table because I think we're going to be at capacity in this room. So as you come in, please do come on up to the table. We promise we won't bite you much.
Don't cover that shirt.
All right, good morning. Good morning, good afternoon. Yeah, as people check their watches. That was just a check to see if you were awake, right? All right, can you hear me? Yeah, all right, that sounds good. So we do have remote attendees. Okay, so hi, I'm Dan York. I'll be the MC and kind of leading us through this discussion today. We do have some remote attendees, so we are going to ask you if you have questions to speak at one of the microphones. We have these funky microphones that are along here where we push the button and you can talk into the little thing that's over here. Those of you who are up here, there are a couple more seats. As Julie said, we don't bite, but we would encourage you to come up here and fill in a couple of the spots here. So we do have that. We also have this microphone, which I can pass around as well. So let me begin by just saying welcome here to our DNSSEC for everyone. How many of you have had any exposure to DNSSEC before today? All right, number of people. How many of you have signed your zones? Not you guys over here, okay. How many of you have a DNSSEC resolver that validates, or a DNSSEC validating resolver? Okay, a few people. All right. Okay, good. Well, yeah, and so we're going to talk a bit about how this all works. The agenda is this that you'll see. I'm going to talk a little bit about what are some of the basics of DNSSEC and how it works. And then we do have a skit that we will bring you, a skit in multiple parts. You could see some people over here getting their T-shirts on and getting ready. And we do this as a way of helping illustrate how DNS works and then how DNSSEC comes into play with that. So we hope we'll give you something that's a little bit entertaining as well, as you get to see some people act out. And we did actually have a rehearsal today, so we may be a little bit more organized than... Well, we're going to try. But part of the point of this is we're often very serious about all this stuff, right? So we want to try to lighten it up and make it a little bit more interesting and fun. We would ask you, think about your questions. One of the great times we've had at this session is we try to leave a lot of time at the end to talk about questions and to go through and really get some good dialogue going. And we've had some very good and lengthy sessions around that in this. So I want to begin by stepping back and going back a long time ago to the very beginnings of DNSSEC, you could sort of say. I want to introduce you to Aguina. She lives in a cave, as you can see, on one side of the Grand Canyon. She wants to, this is Og. He lives on the other side of the Grand Canyon. They would like to go and communicate because it's a very long way for them to get down. They don't get to talk to each other very often. They have to climb down one side and go to the other. So on one of the times that they are together, they notice the smoke coming up from Og's fire. And they say, oh, let's go and start using smoke signals to go from one side to the other. And so they do this as a mechanism to go and exchange communication. They're able to go and talk to each other this way. But then there's a slight bit of a problem. Somebody moves in next door to Og, and the mischievous caveman Kaminsky decides to start sending his own smoke signals too. So our poor Aguina on the other side doesn't know which smoke to believe, which is the right communication stream, which is the right one that she should be looking at. So she decides to go over to the other side and figure out who should she be talking to. While she's there, Aguina and Og talk to the wise village elders, one of whom is caveman Diffy, who says, I've got this idea. He goes into the back of Og's cave, and he comes back, or he goes in there and he notices that there's a pile of strangely colored sand that belongs in just that one cave. It can only be, it's only in that particular one. He comes out with that sand, throws it in the fire, and all of a sudden the smoke is blue. Well, what happens now is that Aguina and Og can chat because she knows that only out of Og's cave can there get to be this special powder, the special sand that turns his smoke blue. Nobody else. Kaminsky, sorry, he can't get in there. Okay? It's all just all about this blue smoke. That's a bit about what we're going to talk about today, is blue smoke is creating this special way that somebody can know that the information that they're getting is, in fact, coming from the one and only persons there. That is what DNSSEC is all about, is providing the knowledge that the information that you're getting out of DNS is the same information that somebody put into it. That's what it's really all about here today as we talk about this. And we'll come back to our little story in a few minutes. But in the meantime, if we think again about how we have this very high-level view of DNS, very often we have a picture like this, the root of DNS, then all of the various different top-level domains, and in the second-level domains that go underneath that. And this is a structure that we've all seen. How many of you have seen pictures like this for DNS, right? Okay, yeah, pretty much everybody. This is the standard kind of picture we have in some, you know, some flavor of that. But it all starts with the root, goes to the TLDs, comes on down to the second level, and can go on down from there. We have these words, these concepts about the resolver, who knows how to get to that root, is able to go down there. Each level tells the resolver to go to the next one until finally we get to the right answer out of all this, that process that we go through. The challenge that we're here to talk about is the fact that there's no security in DNS. We're going to see very easily when we demonstrate this in a couple minutes how easy it is for somebody to spoof an answer and talk about that. And so we're going to go right into that right now. So wake up, Warren, come on. We have a bit of a little skit here to demonstrate this. And I'm going to turn the mic over to my good friend here, Norm.
Okay, thank you. We're very fortunate to have the DNS Glee Club in town. So we're going to act out a few skits for you. So as we mentioned, DNS is a fairly dry topic. DNSSEC's even drier. There's a lot of terminology. But to really understand DNSSEC, you have to really understand how DNS works. So we're going to act it out. So we're going to do a DNS transaction now, and this is typically how one might work. And we'll start with doing a bit of banking. I'm Joe User, and here we have various servers out there, Mr. ISP, The Root, Calm, and Big Bank. So let me start. I'm going to do some banking, got to pay some bills. So I type into my computer, a browser, www.bigbank.com, and hand it off to Mr. ISP.
I'm sorry, I don't know that answer. Let me go try find it for you. Hey, Root, hello. Do you know where www.bigbank.com is?
Well, no, but I do know where .com is. Why don't you try 1111?
Hey, .com.
Hello.
I'm trying to find www.bigbank.com. Do you know where that lives?
The website for bigbank.com. No, I don't know where that is, but I know where bigbank.com is. They're at 2.2.2.2.
Hello, bigbank.com. Can you please tell me where www.bigbank.com is?
Well, it turns out that I can. www.bigbank.com is at 2.2.2.3.
Awesome. Mr. User, here you go.
Thank you very much, Mr. ISP. Now, my computer can go off to 2.2.2.3. which is a big bank, and I can merrily pay all my bills. Happy to do that.
Including your ISP one.
Yeah, I got it. I got you. It's only 2 days late. Okay, so that's how a DNS transaction works, typically. So as you see, me as the user, though, all I have to do is ask my ISP for the request, wait for him to do all his work with the servers, come back, and get the answer. Now, we'll do one with called a man-in-the-middle attack, and we'll demonstrate the same transaction, do some more banking, this time with the man-in-the-middle attack. Okay, more bills to pay, more bills, always bills. Okay, so I'll sit down at my computer and type www.bigbank.com. Mr. ISP, can you help me out with the address, please?
Sure, no worries. Happy to help. Root, can you please tell me where www.bigbank.com is?
I don't know where www.bigbank.com is, but I do know where .com is. Let me show you. It's here. 1.1.1.1.
This is feeling awfully familiar. Yes. .com. Can you please tell me where www.bigbank.com is?
Oh, I don't know where www.bigbank.com is, but I know where bigbank.com is. At 2.2.2.2.
Hey, bigbank.com. Can you please tell me where www.bigbank.com is?
Yes, I can. You can find it at 6.6.6.6.
Cool. Thank you.
Thank you.
Here you go, Mr. User.
Thank you very much, Mr. ISP. Now, I can finally go to my bank, and if I've got any cash left, pay your bill that I owe you. So.
All right. So let's give them a round of applause on that one. They're not done yet. They're going to get another chance to come back. We just need the lights back on. So what did they do there? I mean, that's the real process that DNS goes through all the time, right? All those millions of things. Now, we did leave out the one little detail that the ISP caches the answer. He doesn't go to the root every time, right? So he's holds on to that answer and goes through that process. I wondered if we should have just put the cap on there. Yeah.
It's coming on?
Okay. All right. So the other piece is we talked about is the ISP, right? But it could be, it's the resolver, right? Which might be at your ISP, it might be at the edge of your enterprise network, it might be running on your own laptop for people who are doing that. But it's a DNS resolver somewhere. It might be, one of the public DNS services that people use out there in some way, something like that that's going on there. Okay. Oh, are we getting a... Okay. The camera's blurry. They watched the skit and the camera didn't know how to autofocus. Uh-oh. Your chance for an Emmy might be... All right. So let's talk a little bit about that. You know, again, we're going back as we look at the as we talked about here, this process where Aguino is trying to talk to Og on the other side, and they go through this, you know, where they don't know where it is, and now we want to look at how we add in the blue smoke and how we make that happen. And this is where we're now going to introduce DNSSEC and some pieces around that. So, again, looking back at this, the whole process comes in where we're trying to get to, in this case, www.bigbank.com, and our attacker interjected and put this record in for somebody else. How do we prevent that from happening? Now, what DNSSEC does is it uses a digital signature to ensure that the information you are getting out of DNS is the same information that was put in there by the person who's putting it in there. The keys and the signatures are all stored in DNS. There's new records, something called a DNS key record and a DS record and other pieces. There's some new records that come into play here. And you can just look those up. It's part of what happens is when you go with DNSSEC, when you go and send a query to get a record, to go get www.bigbank.com, you will also get the key that you need to check and the signatures you need to check. There's some other pieces that now come into play with this. So part of this as well involves something that we call the chain of trust. In the picture that you see here in the skit when the folks come back up, the resolver, Warren in this case, knows where the root key is, knows how to get the key that begins the whole chain of trust and is able to know from one person to the next, from one resolver to next, is able to trace it back up and know that nobody has messed with that key in the process. There's a whole way it's all being done cryptographically so that this all works. We have this, what we call this global chain of trust. And the root of DNS was signed back in 2010. And then along the way, various different top-level domains, the TLDs, have been signed as well. And in second-level domains, you can be signed, and that's what we're encouraging people to do, of course, in here. And that's how we make this chain of trust. So with that little interjection, I'm now going to call... We have one more stage. The chain of trust allows this, which is that I can know through these use of DNSSEC signatures that this is the correct answer, and I can refuse this one. Let's see that acted out. We'll bring our team back up here to show us this process from the DNSSEC side. Dr. Evil's going to try to get in the picture again, and we'll see what happens.
Okay. More banking to do, more bills. ISP's still after me. Okay. So, I go back to my laptop again. This time the chain of trust has been established. We have DNSSEC working for us now. I'll start off, www.bigbank.com. Mr. ISP, can you help me with the address, please?
Sorry, still don't know it, but I'll go find out. Hey, Root, hi. I'm looking for www.bigbank.com. Can you tell me where that is?
Well, I can't tell you where www.bigbang.com is, but I do know where .com is. It's over here at 1.1.1.1. Let me just sign this for you.
Looks good. Hey, .com, I'm looking for www.bigbang.com. Can you please tell me where he is?
Oh, I don't know where www.bigbang.com is, but I know where bigbang.com is. They're at 2.2.2.2.
Bigbank.com. I'm looking for www.bigbank.com. Can you please tell me where that is?
Of course I can. You can find it at 6.6.6.6. Here it is.
That signature doesn't look right.
It is at 2.2.2.3, and it is signed all the way.
Let me have a closer look at that. Seems good. Here you go, Mr. User. I'm sure this is the right answer.
Great. Thank you, Mr. ISP. And now I can go to this address knowing it's not been tampered with along the way.
All right, let's give these guys.
Thank you, Dr. Evil. Thank you to Adam for stepping into and helping us on this. So that's the story of DNS and DNSSEC. That's how it works in this case. You know, subject to the fact that we're simplifying it a bit, but that's the general idea of what's happening in here. Now, notice that now that Warren, as the ISP, this is Warren, by the way, as he had that, he would now have that answer, and he'd be able to keep that for a certain period of time. So that he would be able to keep passing that back to Norm as Norm did more transactions and more pieces around that. This is how the flow of DNSSEC works. DNSSEC is all about ensuring that the information you get out there. It's not, and the reason I make that in particular point is that it's not about encrypting the information. It's not about making it confidential. It doesn't do that. What the focus is around ensuring you reach to the right place. Now, we showed it here for a web interaction, but DNSSEC is useful for any other kind of transmission across the internet, any other kind of communication. And in fact, one of the uses where it's being used a lot right now is in email communication, coupled with something called DANE, and some ways to provide records, and we're actually providing TLS certificates to provide encryption mechanisms. So DNSSEC and DANE together can help provide a path toward more secure email. It's being used in that environment. It's being used in the Jabber environment, in the XMPP world, for securing the communication between Jabber servers and other chat environments. So while we show it here as a web interaction, because it's a simple use case for us all to understand, the ideas behind DNSSEC and DNSSEC and other ways that use that are used for a lot of other things. I see Paul standing at the back, Paul Vouders against the door there, who's been very involved with using it for PGP and making open PGP records be accessible through DNS, because you can put them into DNS, secure them with DNSSEC, and now you know that you can receive an assurance that the key you're getting out of DNS is in fact the one that somebody put in there. So it's a very versatile system to use for all of that. And what I want to bring up next is my colleague Russ Mundy to talk a little bit more about why you might want to do this and what you can do with it. So I'll turn it over to Russ.
Thank you very much, Dan. Here's the clicker. Okay. All right. So one of the things that a lot of people wonder about is, why is DNS important anyway? And why would you worry about somebody just getting in the middle for doing names work and or stealing your name or giving a wrong answer? Well, when people are doing that, it's not to get DNS or to confuse DNS. They're really doing it to get to applications, because essentially every application that runs on the internet today makes use of DNS. So whether it's email or Jabber or web, you're using DNS prior to actually making use of your application, although you never really see that as a user. And so what can you do if you do that? Well, you know, do a man-in-the-middle attack, just like we showed a little bit ago here. And if you can place yourself in the middle of application pieces talking to each other, you can do various things. Steal passwords, collect email. And one of the things that is sometimes done for these types of attacks is the traffic from the application is sent on to who's actually expecting it, and they never even know that stuff was stolen in the middle. One of the things that I observed a few years ago when just doing some general exploration about DNSSEC and DNS hijacks, there was actually a university that had as part of their coursework, the students were being included the requirement that they had to write a DNSSEC hijack piece of software. Unfortunately, in the curriculum that I saw, there was nothing that talked about ethics or anything like that. They just said, oh, go write some code to steal DNS out there. So when you,
So the next thing that, as Dan already said, the DNSSEC application, use of cryptographic mechanisms with DNS allows you to make sure from a user perspective that the answer you're getting is the information that was put into DNS in the first place. So it doesn't give confidentiality to the information, but it does give authentication and integrity checks to the information. So the next slide will show how generally when you... There we go. So when you first start a query, www.ab.org or bigbank.org, the first thing it does is go to your ISP, your local recursive resolver. It then, in turn, sends it off to through the chain. The answer comes back, and you can see there's actually... We're not getting answers. Am I pushing the wrong button? No. There we go. There we go. And so eventually, after a bunch of packets flow around, the answer comes back, and then you can make your application connection. So a bunch of DNS stuff happens before the user's screen actually fills, in this case with a web application. But as a user, you don't see that. So what happens when you get a hijack here? Oops. Boy, am I... Okay. Am I not waiting long enough? Okay, here we go. Yeah. I was pushing the button too quickly. And so if you hit off and there's no hijack, you get the same information back, whether you're using DNSSEC or not using DNSSEC. This is a web browser and a tailored website that's set up so that it shows what happens when you're making use of DNSSEC. And in this case, there was no man in the middle, no attack. They give you exactly the same results. Now we'll inject Dr. Evil Hacker. And so the query goes off the same way. And Dr. Evil Hacker has said, oh, I know right now. I'm giving you the answer right away. And even though the DNS queries continue around the network, the user already has an answer, so his computer was fooled. And he goes to the wrong place. And the answer eventually comes back to him, but the computer that the user asked the question from first has an answer, so it doesn't matter that the proper answer comes back later. He's going to act on the incorrect answer. So instead of going where he's supposed to go, he goes where he's not supposed to go. But if you insert DNSSEC, then the local computer ignores the wrong answer and then takes the proper answer. So that's just a pictorial way of showing, come on, we'll get here, what happens with the hijack being prevented by DNSSEC. So what happens in terms of what the user can see with the hijack? So same screen as before for the DNSSEC-enabled browser, but if you're not running a DNSSEC-enabled browser, you can have information changed either the entire page or a part of the page. In fact, this particular illustration is one of a live hijack that we did at one workshop a while back. And the screen is a little hard to read, but the hijacker, in this case, inserted information on the web page. That was our friend Dr. Steve Crocker saying that DNSSEC won't solve world hunger. It'll solve a lot of things, but it won't solve world hunger. And if you look at the one that's doing the DNSSEC check, there's no such entry there. So it can be an entire page replaced. It can be a part of a page replaced. It can be just any DNS-based portion can be hijacked. Now, a lot of people think, oh, I go to a website, that's one DNS query, right? No, wrong. That was about 5 years ago,
CNN.com, and it was about 60-some DNS queries to fill a home page. Now, it's about 150 to 200. So any one of those DNS queries can be hijacked, or multiples of them. So there's a lot of DNS that happens that's totally invisible to the user. And the biggest point of DNSSEC is to make sure that the actual DNS zone content is delivered, is in, be able that the receiver can determine that they've received the right stuff. And that's really what DNSSEC does, is make sure the right stuff gets delivered. So how many places does DNSSEC fit in this? Well, there's a little bit of DNSSEC in many places. So if you're running, say, a major operation that is heavily DNS dependent, if you're a registrar or a registry operator, you have a lot of DNS and you're very, probably have a lot of good staff that's very familiar with it. And you're probably going to be running it with your own organic resources. So you probably have a lot of DNS knowledgeable people. But if you're a sort of in the middle kind of enterprise, you might be running it yourself, or you might have outsourced it to somebody to run for you, or you might be doing a mix of it. And again, the DNS zone data is the important part. So whoever you are giving your DNS zone data to handle, the DNSSEC is an aspect of that because, again, it is ensuring the correctness of the DNS zone data. Don't let the crypto scare you. It's really just there to help make sure the zone data is correct. So in this case, the simplest illustration is more zone data, more data gets put into the zone, that is the DNSSEC data, and the validating recursive resolver, if you remember Warren, went and got all of the things, checked the signatures, and by golly, it just all worked, and he got the right information back. So that's sort of the simplest illustration of where DNS fits, DNSSEC fits into DNS. And so when you think about and look at your activities for doing DNSSEC, you need to look at your activities for doing DNS itself. And what you're doing with DNS often will dictate what makes the most sense for you to do with DNSSEC. And that should be your general guiding principle. And I want to then turn it back to Dan as our MC to get into the question answer part.
Sounds great. Thank you, Russ. So that's really what we had prepared in a way of prepared talks to talk about tonight. We want to cover a couple other little things before we get into things. You all should see a DNSSEC for Beginners document floating around here. If you don't have copies, we have some more of those here. On the back side, there's a whole series of links that are available to you that talk about where you can learn more about DNSSEC. Some of those are on the Internet Society site where I work on the Deploy 360 program. We have some on the DNSSEC Tools project that has a number of different tools that are out there. The DNSSEC deployment.org, some other different pieces that you can use on here. There's including a program called OpenDNSSEC, which is used in the signing side of things. There's a version of Mozilla called Bloodhound, which is a browser that is used for secure DNSSEC browsing, you could say. It has the validator built into the product or into the application so that you could use it. In the case that Russ showed where you have all those hundreds of different queries, it would validate all of those. There are also some plugins available for some of the other browsers that let you go and at least see the DNSSEC status of some of the places that are out there. And so this is some information you can get back on here. Some tools from VeriSign Labs. There's a bit about the history of DNSSEC, other pieces that are there. The other thing I'll just mention right now before we go into the questions is on if you're interested in more, on Wednesday we have our deep dive DNSSEC technical workshop that happens in this room starting at 8:30 and going until about 2:45. And we have a long agenda that's published on the site that has a lot of different things ranging from DNSSEC activities here in Asia Pacific to discussions of tools, discussions of monitoring solutions, and what should be a very interesting panel around DNSSEC and DNS operators and how that all works. So if you're interested, come to that on Wednesday at 8:30. So with that, I'd like to open it up for any questions. We've got a whole pool of people here who can answer it, so this is your moment to ask them. I see a gentleman in the back. Yes, let me come back to you with the microphone, because we do have people who are remote. Do we have another mic? We got another mic? Awesome. Here.
First of all, thank you for that great explanation and great representation of such a complex thing. Every time I bring up DNSSEC with more knowledgeable people, there always, after a few minutes, there falls enumeration attacks. Could you please elaborate a bit on that? And is that a real thing, or is that something that can be thwarted?
Sure. So the question was about enumerating enumerating the zone, basically walking the zone and being able to see it. Yeah, so in the initial way that DNSSEC was first created, there is an attack that you could use to go back and walk the zone, basically, to know what were all the different other elements that were there. Now, that happened when people implemented something called NSEC. There's also now something called NSEC 3, which prevents that by adding a little bit of a hash inside there to go and create that. The other piece about that is oftentimes for a lot of the public zones, the fact that you can walk the zone and be able to find all the records doesn't really matter in many cases, especially on public sites that you're looking at. It's not really as much of a concern. I see Russ wants to weigh in, so let me...
Yeah, early on in the DNSSEC design, the general expectation and philosophy is that the total content of DNS was not of... releasing the information was no concern because anybody could get to it anyway. And so that turned out to be a faulty assumption. For certain zones, that's still a very, very valid assumption. Like, for instance, the root zone. The content of the root zone is completely public. Lots of people get it. Lots of people look at it. Some TLDs are considered public. Some are not. And so that was the reason that NSEC 3 was created, is to accommodate those that needed to actually protect the full content of their zone. Individual answers are fine, but they didn't want to release the full content of the zone.
So the answer is that they can look at implementing what's called NSEC 3, and there's a lot of documentation out there in different ways. Somebody else had the other microphone, I think, or no? Oh, okay. This gentleman over here, and I saw you too. Or why don't you go ahead with your microphone there while... okay.
Hi.
It's
sorry,
okay.
It's all right. Well, actually, this is my first ever session relating to DNSSEC, so I'm sorry if the question comes across as very elementary. In your example, what you the consumer actually knew which website they had to access, but most of the traffic which gets directed to any website is via a search engine. So how does that work in terms of, you know, the search results we get? And sometimes we notice that at a different location, like if I was to search for some keywords in Pakistan, my top 100 searches would be very different from if I were to do it in Singapore. So how does that all relate?
Sure. And likewise, in this world of personalized search engines, my results, even if you and I are here, my results are going to be different from yours, right? So the fact, though, is when you get those results, you're clicking on that link, and even though you may not have entered in www.bigbang.com, the link you're clicking on is going to that site. So the search result is really just getting you that information, right? And then when you're clicking on those links, that's when you're initiating this process and you're going and you're contacting your DNS resolver and saying, I want to go to this site. And so that's really what's happening there. And so then it's ensuring that you're getting the right answer back. You know, that the owners of bigbang.com, they put in www equals this address. So you're getting an assurance that that is the address that they put in there. So it's going back to there. And please feel free. I mean, we had a lot of people in here who had, you know, no exposure to DNSSEC. So this is your moment to give us, you know, questions that you think might be really, really basic. Throw them out here. We've got people. Oh, Wes wants to say something, I think, in response to you.
Yeah, one other really quick point is that the using a search engine gives you actually two different places to possibly poison them. right? The one is that you can redirect them to your search engine instead of the one that they were originally trained to go to. And then two, as Dan said, the link from the search engine needs to be looked up too. So there's actually multiple points of attacks by always going to search engines.
Well, and if you were to go to, you know, search engine dot whatever, which pick your search engine you wish to use, DNSSEC, if that domain was signed for the search engine, the domain, you know, that you get back, you could be sure you're reaching the correct address for the search engine and it hadn't been redirected by an attacker in some way. I saw the gentleman over here.
Actually, my background is agriculture engineer. I am Ahmed Issa. I can fellowship from the Dari Data City Organization, Sudan. My background is agriculture engineer, and I just come by the IT as a hobby. But still, DNSSEC is very... it is not clear to me, because I am working just on the browsers. I'm not going deep. And sometimes, if I'm not mistaken, I get a message that this page is encrypted. Do you want to continue or to quit? So I didn't get the right answer. Sometimes I go continue. Sometimes I go quit. So which is the best way to tackle that problem? The other thing, I have my website hijacked 3 times. And most of the time, all my data are lost because I'm not familiar with that. So in the future, how to tackle that? Thank you.
So you've got a couple of different questions in there. So the first one, if you're talking as far as when you get that error that says, you know, this may not be protected or maybe signed at the wrong certificate, that's typically what's happening with your TLS or what commonly is known as SSL, but it's really the transport layer security. It's a certificate that's being used to encrypt the connection to that. And one of the things that's interesting is the experience that we've had as users with those warnings is that very often people just click through those warnings. You know, you get the thing pops up, hey, this is the wrong certificate. You know, what do you want to do? Well, most people want to get to the site. So very often they just go and they click through that and they go on to the website. And at which point they may now be talking to the completely wrong server or in some instance. One of the interesting things with DNSSEC is that it doesn't, the implementation, it just gives you back a failure to get to the website or get to the IP address. You can't get there, you know, at all. So you get back, if you want to dive in there, it's called a serve fail is the error in DNS, but it basically says, sorry, that address doesn't exist. Now, the challenge that you get into is this can create an interesting user experience. The folks from Comcast gave us the case study a couple DNSSEC workshops ago where they talked about the case when they rolled out DNSSEC validation to their large network in North America. What they did was they started to, you know, anytime somebody, a domain didn't validate correctly, then the end users would not get the website. Well, what happened was that the folks at NASA, the, you know, U.S. Space Agency, NASA.gov, what they did was they messed up. And they wrote a whole white paper about this, by the way. So this is, I mean, this is all public stuff. They didn't handle the key rollover of a new key correctly. So all of a sudden, NASA.gov stopped validating. It had a bad error. So people who were going to NASA.gov all of a sudden couldn't get there on Comcast network. Now, of course, this being the age of social media, people whipped out their phones, looked at this, said, oh, I can get to NASA.gov on my mobile phone because they're not doing DNSSEC validation. Must be a conspiracy on Comcast's part. And it became this big thing on Twitter and everything else. But, you know, but the reality was that they were blocking people from getting to what was a bogus site in their perspective. So with DNSSEC, the failure that we're seeing is not something that you have to click through like that. It's typically more you just won't get to the website at all. You know, it's you won't see it. It'll never come back to you. That's typically the implementation that we see with that. So it's providing you with a protection layer on that. As far as how to protect your site from being hacked and things on that line, I think we could have a larger discussion there than what we could really talk about with DNSSEC here. Yes. Question back in the back.
Yeah, mine is more or less like an observation. A similar incident happened in Ghana. That was last month. My name is Wisdom Donko from Ghana. I work with the National IT Agency. What happened was, about seven websites of government agencies were attacked by hackers from, I think, Algeria and then Morocco. And then what happened was, our president made a statement that Africa, for that matter, the West Africa region, has to combine forces and then face the Boko Haram people. So then the following week, our president happened to travel to Germany. And then I think the German president invited him. And then they were talking about energy issues or so. So I think within that same period, the hackers attacked those seven websites. And then the information they left was they are the Taliban, something. You made a careless statement, and then we are going to kind of gun you down. That was the statement, the information they left on the website. So we did an investigation. And then the investigation that came out was the attack was at the application level. And then what we realized was that most of those websites were using Joomla. And then they were not updating their security updates and those things. So, and then some of them too, their login and other things were not protected. It was open. So they used that and then they sent a broadcast message. And then it was a robot. And then the robot happened to enter and then brought out the information, and then they were able to enter into the system. And then through that, they deleted all the information on the system, and then they replaced the index file with right. their own file with the information that,
yeah.
I mean, so that was that incident that happened. And then so we had to bring all of those technical people from within those MDAs, and then we gave them the training that this is what goes on. Especially with the forms that you have within right. your website, you have to at least put a capture, an image capture on it, so that when those robots come, I mean, it will be difficult for them. They'll fill the form all right, but then they can't read the capture image for them to be able to enter into the system. So he's saying they attack his website three times. So I was thinking maybe the loophole was he was not updating his security, and then he was also
right. Yeah, I mean, that's a great illustration of the kind of attacks we're seeing out there today, and it's a very common one. You know, a content management system, you know, isn't being updated, or just the website isn't being updated in some way. And this is an illustration, though, too, that you know the attacks we see are at a bunch of different levels. You know, DNSSEC provides a way to protect against one layer of the attack. It ensures that people are, in fact, getting to your web server and to the correct web server. It doesn't do anything to protect that web server, per se, from being attacked in the manner that you outlined. It's really just one of the different elements, if we think about it, in a number of layers of defense against the attackers that are out there. So a signed record would prevent people from going to another site if it had been redirected, because you outlined the attack against the actual server that happened. And those are, you know, the terrible kinds of attacks that are happening all the time. There is another one, though, another attack that we're seeing out there in the wild where people are doing exactly what we talked about here. They're redirecting the DNS so people don't even ever reach your web server. They're going to another one. There was one what? Malaysia Air, about 2-3 weeks ago, was having their website being redirected somewhere else. There's an attack that's been ongoing for some period of time that the researchers at Carnegie Mellon, the CERT CC at Carnegie Mellon, indicated that their research showed that people were redirecting email through unknown servers by providing the MX records, which are the mail exchange records that you get back when you're delivering email. Somebody out there, and the CERT CC researchers couldn't identify who, was redirecting email to some other servers, And it was ultimately being delivered, but in the meantime, somebody out there was siphoning it off and looking at the email in some way. So these kind of attacks are where DNSSEC can help, because if the mail server were to be able to check the record and know, yes, this is the right place for me to go, then it could prevent that kind of attack. I saw a gentleman over here.
So we had the question about a search engine. I was wondering, are there any special requirements for the search engine providers, Google and the rest of them, because we as a community are trusting them to tell us that this address we're sending you to is the correct address?
Oh, okay. Julie's asking, too, if you could state your names, please, for the folks who are remote as well. And for what? And for the name and affiliation. Well, so... Yeah, I'm laughing because Warren is slinking down over there. And Warren is from Google. So... do you want to say anything about that?
Well, there's not actually a huge amount that the search engine can do at that point. They're just giving you a URL, you know, the name of the next site to go to. And so what needs to happen is for those sites to have some sort of DNSSEC protection. Yep. So, you know, if you encourage people to sign their zones, then whichever search engine will give you the URL, and then you'll be able to know you're going to the correct one. Once a search engine gives you an answer, though, it's completely out of the picture.
But you have there's the larger question of search engine ranking and how, you know, if you do a search on your organization's name and what comes up. And that's a larger question, really, in the space of search engine rankings, et cetera. I saw somebody, yes. Oh, I see a couple questions here. Okay. Yeah. You? Yeah.
My name is Rohan. First time fellow from Sri Lanka. What I need to know is, as a client, how do we know that a particular domain is using DNSSEC?
How do you know if it's using DNSSEC? Okay, well, that's a good question. So a couple of different ways. One is if you have a validating DNSSEC resolver, it will query that and it will get back. There's a certain bit it can get back to say that there is a signature there. You can also get the records for it. There's what's called RRSIG records. There's additional records that would come back to you that would know there are signatures associated with this domain. So when a query goes out there, you won't just get back the record for the website or whatever else. You'll get back additional records as well. So there are some ways that can happen on there. No, the question was, is there an indication in the browser? There's not, and that's one of those questions that we get into about the user experience and the value of the lock. Now, if you want to have it in your browser, you can use one of the plugins that's mentioned in the back here. The folks at CZNIC Labs from the Czech Republic, they have made up some nice browser plugins that do provide you that kind of visual clue for the main URL that you go to, you know, that's out there. You know, as Russ mentioned, you know, if when you go to a website, it's querying a lot of things, but it would at least check the main URL that's there, and you could see that if you're interested. But beyond that, the user experience is out there. I saw you and somebody else in the back there. Go ahead, yes.
Hello, my name's Lucy from New Zealand. We've touched a bit on the signatures, and it makes sense to me, but I was wondering if you could explain a little bit more how the keys work. And you mentioned that when NASA didn't roll out their key properly, that all went kaput. And it seems to me that wherever there's a chink in the chain, someone will eventually find a way of corrupting it. So how are the keys protected and work to make sure that no one manages to step in there?
Sure. So when you sign a zone, as you have there, when you sign that, what happens is it's a standard kind of public key, public-private key thing that you generate a key that's used to sign the zone, and then there's a public key that's shared out publicly that people can use to validate the zone. It's, if you've ever done anything with public key cryptography, it's that kind of mechanism. And so there is a good protection that needs to be done around that private key so that nobody can go and steal that and sign on your behalf. And there are documents called DPSs, DNSSEC Protection Policy Statements, that outline the steps that some of the TLDs go through that really make sure that the key is protected. And in fact, every 3 months, I Can goes through what's called a key ceremony for the root key, where they generate a new signing key. And they have a whole long scripted program that you can go and watch the live video of to see actually what the steps they go through to ensure that they have a very high level of accountability around that process. Now, that's beyond the scope of what, you know, for my own domains, in a couple of cases, my involvement is I use a DNS hosting provider where I go in and I check a box that says enable DNSSEC. And boom, it's done. I'm trusting them to manage my key and to do so, and they've done so. You know, I'm happy with the security that they have. In another case, I'm using software running on my own server, and when I've set it up, I've had it generate the keys, and so the keys are existing on my server, and they have a length of time. So they typically there's some best practices around how you do that, and there's differences with zone signing keys and key signing keys and stuff that gets a little bit more involved than we care about today. But the net of it is that typically you would sign a key for a year for a top level, and I'm getting off into the weeds. But let me just leave it at there and say there's a time period that you'd sign that for, and then you'd roll that at the end of that period in typically some way. I saw a woman right there in the red right behind there for a second. And then I'll get back to you there.
Thank you so much. My name is Catherine. I'm a fellow from Uganda. I have you've touched on a few in your response right now. You've talked about a few of what I was intending to ask. One was are there some specific technical requirements for a business or a company to implement DNSSEC, and also the user experience. You said that there's not so much on the user experience to discuss now, but just wondering if you're getting hit and maybe the DNSSEC is protecting you, is there a way you can know? But like a log, like any tools you can use, for instance, to say, "Oh, DNSSEC has protected you from so many attacks," and then maybe you can be satisfied that the DNSSEC is actually a good investment for you.
Sure, sure. Well, so let me answer your first thing about what can a business do. There's two parts to DNSSEC, okay, and it's important to think about it as two parts. One is what we talked about here, the signing of your domain or domains, and the second part is the checking of signatures, the validation, doing what Warren did as the ISP. All of you today could go home and turn on validation in the web, in the DNS resolver that you're using. Okay, if you're using Bind or Unbound or Microsoft Windows Server or any of these, it's very often a single configuration line, okay, in a configuration file that will turn that on and start you on the path of checking signatures. That's something that all of us can do, and I've done it in my own home router and my own system. I'm doing that in my home network. Okay, you can turn that on and enable DNSSEC validation in a DNS resolver. That's one side of it. It's a checking of signatures. Now, separately, you can go through the process of signing your domain or domains, and now that may be a little bit more involved because you need to involve whoever is managing that zone for you, managing the domain, which might be your registrar, if they're also being the DNS operator. It might be you or your IT team, if they're the ones who are managing it. It might be another DNS operator who's doing it. So that may be a little bit more, the signing of the domains might be a little bit more involved, but the turning on the validation is something that any business can do and start to get the protection around that. As far as the tools around the law, is that what you want to? No, I was going to say, as far as there are a number of tools, and Wes, why don't you answer that? I'm talking too much. This is Wes Hardiger, who's been involved in a lot of DNSSEC tools.
I think one of the primary points of your question is how would you notice when there's errors? And all of the name servers that will do validation for you do spit out errors in the log file, but you often have to go look for them. From the user side of view, point of view, the web browser is just going to get this note saying, I failed to look up the name if they're using a validating resolver near them. And you won't be able to tell exactly why. You just won't be able to get there. In the same way that if you mistype a name into your browser, right? If you type Google with three O's, which there probably is a Google with three O's, but 15 O's. If you typed Google with 15 O's, right, it's not going to be there. And you'll get that exact same error, because what will happen is if you actually type Google correctly and you're going through a validating browser and it gets an incorrect answer and the little signature was not on the back of the paper like you saw earlier today, you would just fail to get there and your browser would say, I don't know how to get to google.com, because it doesn't. It was returned an error. And if what happens is if somebody goes to look through the log file, they'll find out that, yes, there was actually a failure to get the correct answer and it had to give up.
And Warren's probably checking to see if Google with 15 O's actually works. Okay, I saw this gentleman, and then I see two folks over here. Oh, and I see two more over here. Okay. All right. Yes.
Hi, this is Mohit Batra from National Internet Exchange of India. Okay, so my question is, if a user knows the IP address directly of the website and types it in the web browser, and, I mean, does that... DNSSEC comes into picture in this case?
No, because they're just going directly to that website. So they're not using DNS at all in that case.
There's also a PTR record, I think, in the DNS. So it PTR record, reverse mm-hmm. DNS resolution.
Yes.
So that well, won't...
So if they use, PTR records, reverse lookups, if in some of the... Oh, we need Roy here as far as the... He was working with the... Some of the RARs have been signing the reverse lookup zones, so you could, a PTR record that would resolve that would come back with the correct, with the signed information. So that would be a case where you would see that more in your log files, for instance, or some mechanism like that. Is that where you're going with that?
Maybe. I'm not very sure about...
Okay.
But another question, small question. And... there is a thing called Dynamic DNS as well. Dynamic DNS?
Yes.
So does it has anything to do with the DNSSEC?
Dynamic DNS is just really, it's a service typically where you're registering server. And I actually think I saw this. Okay, well, we'll get to you. So with Dynamic DNS, what's typically happening is you're updating the service with your new IP address. Okay. Now, what gets interesting is every time that a DNS zone changes, it has to be re-signed. So if you're updating that, then the dynamic DNS service needs to re-sign the zone. And there are services that do that kind of thing, where they do the online signing, and they can just do it right away and very quickly and do all that kind of thing. So you would need to find out if that dynamic DNS service would support that kind of inline signing or online signing that was there. So it's probably, I could see it being more resource intensive for some of those services. I'm not quite sure about what dynamic DNS services are supporting DNSSEC signing at this point. I don't know. That'd be a good question to ask, though. Okay, over here.
Good evening. My name is Oradile, a fellow from Botswana. As a legal person sitting in the technical advisory committee for the .bw domain name, cctld. I was wondering what role I can play in the deployment of DNSSEC for .bw, because my Bokra is in the process of deploying the same for the .bw cctld.
Excellent. We'd love to be able to, if you look at the DNSSEC deployment maps, it would be excellent to add Botswana in there, because we need some more coverage down in there. The first step to being able to sign a domain is that you need your top-level domain. Your TLD needs to be able to be signed. So you have to have that. So it's excellent that you're doing that. So as a legal advisor, is that role, what would be the role, gentleman over here, what would you suggest for her as far as what she could do to help with that? I would say one of the things would be to encourage, for instance, government departments to sign their domains and anyone else who's part of that cctld. That would be certainly one aspect. For instance, the U.S. government is an example, the .gov domain. They had a mandate go out a number of years back that said that, you know, all government agency should be DNSSEC signed by a certain date, et cetera. And they're up to now about 87% of all .gov domains have been signed. The government of Puerto Rico is not here, but the gentleman is here at ICANN. I just spoke to him at the last session. They've done a lot of work. And in their case, the .pr registry works with the government. And they've set up a system where they're actually automatically signing all the government domains. So they've set up a system so that all those .gov.pr domains are being automatically signed by the registrar. So it may be something that you could help with in that mechanism. Any other suggestions for her? Jacques, anything from Canada? You want to? No? Okay. I think that would probably be the starting place, would be to help in those kind of ways. The other piece, too, that we're trying to, and this is something that might be of interest, too, is to talk to people around the fact that, you know, you are helping secure your identity and ensure that people are being able to get to the correct sites. And that's certainly been something when people talk about security, about protecting their online identity, their online brand, the pieces like that, you know, they're using this as a way to help ensure that they can get there. Yes, Adam.
Adam Leach from Nominet. We look after the .UK zone, and we have a free DNSSEC signing service to aid people that want to sign their domains.
He said in .UK they've put a free signing service to help people sign their domains. So they've implemented some pieces around there. I see over here.
Thank you. Yep. Svetlana Tkachenko.ua.
I'm sorry, what?
.ua.
.ua, okay.
Yes, right. Do you have any statistics how much cyber crimes were prevented by using DNSSEC? That's the first question. And the second, does cybercrime have their own solution against DNSSEC? Maybe more complicated hijacking attack or something like this?
Right. So I don't have any statistics, nor am I aware of any, that would talk about how much cybercrime has been presented by DNSSEC, because partly, again, DNSSEC is one layer in a much more comprehensive suite of defense mechanisms that are there. We know it has prevented some hijackings in some spaces that are out there, but we can't necessarily quantify it. Yeah, there are a number of statistics sites that talk about the amount of implementation, the amount of pieces that are out there, the amount of validation going on. But that would be great research. I'd love it if somebody would dive into that, actually. Okay, I see a number of other questions.
I have a question. This is Zakir from Pakistan, and ICANN fellow, for the record. I have a quick question. Is there an alternative to DNSSEC? I mean, is it possible that we use some application layer firewalls or some sort of softwares to be able to overcome the issues that might arise because of not using DNSSEC, right? Another follow-up quick questions. Is this something similar to IPsec? We've heard a lot about the traditionally known as IPsec. So is IPsec something for the numbers at the same level and DNSSEC for the names at the same level?
So, all right. So, wait, what was your first question? What?
An alternative to DNSSEC. Can we use some alternatives like application
level? Oh, yes, okay.
Level?
So the answer is DNSSEC solves this particular question around how do you ensure that you get the information back from DNS. To that solution, that DNSSEC is really the answer that we have to protect the integrity of the information coming out of DNS. That's really the solution that we have today for that. Now, when you start getting into application layer questions, you know, and you look at how to use, for instance, TLS to provide an encrypted connection between your web browser and a web server, there are other mechanisms that are being used to help ensure you're using the correct TLS certificate, for instance, using the correct encryption certificate that's there. And one of those that we talk about in the DNSSEC is something called DANE, which is putting a fingerprint or the entire TLS certificate into DNS, signing it with DNSSEC, et cetera, and it provides a mechanism to know that you're using the correct encryption certificate for that. There are also other mechanisms. There's certificate pinning in browsers. There's other different pieces that get into play that can help with that kind of mechanism at the application layer. But at the DNS layer, DNSSEC is really the solution that we have at the moment to know that you're getting the right information out there. On the IPsec question, I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Paul Wouters here, who is Mr. IPsec and other things.
Hi. So the traditional IPsec deployment is a VPN deployment where both parties know each other. So I have a VPN client. I have configured a server or a certificate and a server for my VPN server on the other side, and I connect to a known party. So that works really well if you're connecting from, you know, home to your office. Like, your office has given you the information you need to connect to them securely, verify their identity, and then encrypt everything. Now, the problem is I cannot configure that for millions and millions of zones to do the encryption and everything, at least until now. So one of the things we're working on is actually a DNS record called IPsec key, where you can put the IPsec key, the public key, into DNS. And because of DNSSEC, you can now prove it's the right key, and now we can start rolling out encryption, like VPNs, to everyone without any pre-configuration. So I have a few servers running some of this experimental code. If you go to buffh.nohats.ca, there will be an IPsec server running, and the key is published in DNS. And so we're hoping to get more encryption automatically going, so without any manual work, because it will never scale if we have to like do this all manually.
Just a quick follow-up question. Since we don't have an alternative to DNSSEC, right? So is there any, that means every CCTLD, every TLD, actually every registry requires DNSSEC to be deployed, right? So do we have some policy compliance or some enforcement from ICANN or maybe from IANA that every registry has actually to?
Well, so yes, and let me also just be clear on one thing to what Paul said. So IPsec and DNSSEC do two very different things too. DNSSEC, again, is ensuring the information you get out of DNS is what was put in. So it's integrity checking. IPsec is actual encryption. So it's encrypting the tunnel that you're – it's encrypting a connection that you have. So one is protecting the confidentiality of your connection, and the other one is ensuring the integrity, making sure it's there. So they are two different – pieces that work together complementary in the way that Paul mentioned, where the two can be used together to ensure that you have a really tight thing. So, yes, TLDs need to be signed in order for the subdomains underneath that, the second-level domains, to be able to be signed. On Wednesday morning, I'll show you a set of slides that have maps and counts about what we have. We're now up to over 77% of all top-level domains are now signed with DNSSEC. Now, largely because that number is so high, because in the new GTLD program, all new GTLDs must support DNSSEC from the beginning and must be signed at the top level. So as we've had these 500-plus new GTLDs come into the overall network, they're all coming in signed. You know, anybody who registers a second-level domain underneath a TLD has the capability that they could sign it and have it linked into the global chain of trust. Doesn't mean it, again, this means that TLDs are signed. The second level domains don't have to be. I mean, it's, you know, but they have the option. A number of the CCTLDs are the ones that are in that remaining 23% or so that are not signed, are a number of the CCTLDs. And some of the programs that are out there to help with that include programs from ICANN and their DNSSEC team that are going around working with a number of the different CCTLDs to help them get signed and to work with that. And now, I mean, hearing the woman from Botswana who was talking about their work there, you know, there's a number of other domains that are turning on. We'll talk on Wednesday morning. I mean, Australia just actually recently signed their domain as well. So we're getting a number, or published it from the root on down. So there's some number of things happening there. So hopefully that helps a little bit. So compliance-wise, though, it depends upon whether you're a new GTLD where it's required. CCTLDs, it's certainly encouraged. You know, and we're hoping that they will go and do that, right? Nobody's telling you have to, right? Nope. Jacques is with .ca, so I'm saying that. Gentleman in the back, I see, has been. Oh wait. Oh, okay. All right. Somebody needs to track it. Go ahead.
Hi, this is Stefan from Malaysia. I'm logging into a wireless router here, which I'm trusting the integrity of the current network. So I saw that there is a primary DNS, secondary DNS, all assigned to me by the router. So what's stopping some guy from, you know, just hacking it or change the route or malicious point me to their bogus DNS server and then I'm done? Is there any way to prevent that?
Not really. I mean, okay. All right, I got Paul and Russ want to jump, and Wes want to jump in here.
I think the easiest way to counter such an attack is to simply run a recursive server on your own machine that does DNSSEC validation. Then you know you are using DNSSEC and that it is being properly validated because you're in control of it. Yeah.
So, but I won't be having the full list in my computer, right, if that's the case? How do I do a recursive DNS lookup on my notebook?
You can put a recursive name server on your machine, and it will run just fine there. Many of us do that.
Okay.
Yeah. In fact, many use something called DNSSEC trigger in combination with a resolver on our laptops, and some people do it on their phones. And what you're using is you're running a validator on your own machine, and when the network gives you a DNS server, you're only using that to get the information from outside the world, if you can use it. The good thing about that is you're still using the cache. So we are all using the cache of the name servers assigned by the ICANN network here, even though we're all doing our own validation. So we're not trusting it, because DNSSEC data is signed. We can ask any stranger for it because we know when it's been tampered with. So we just ask these insecure servers that ICANN provides us here on the wireless, which we don't trust, and we run them through our own validation to make sure that they're right or not.
I see.
Now, there are some tricks when you're at hotels or at coffee shops where they make you believe a few DNS lies for you to go to accept the terms of conditions or put in your credit card number. So sometimes you have to believe the lies before you can get on the network.
Yep.
That is actually the biggest problem for us. So we have to come up with all these innovative ways where we allow these lies to happen for a little bit until we don't need them anymore. And we have to make sure that they don't contaminate our existing DNS cache, so that, you know, they don't have this, you know, 15 seconds between you clicking OK on the web page to spoof all kind of DNS answers to you. That's actually fairly hard to do, but it's getting there.
Yeah, and that's something called DNSSEC-trigger, T-R-I-G-G-E-R, trigger. And that's one of the things that's out there. And this is a challenge that we have in terms of, you know, where, you know, even if you get the answer back, how do you, what's the zone? Could somebody go and inject an answer in there? Could Dr. Evil swoop in and do something like that? Because you'll see people, for instance, who will use Google's public DNS, you know, the 8.8.8.8 or the IPv6 equivalents, and it does DNSSEC validation. So all the people out there who are using Google's public DNS are getting DNSSEC validated answers, which is huge. It's an enormous number of people that use those services in doing that. The challenge is that there is still space. You're sending your query out to Google's public servers and waiting for the response to come back in there. There is space in there for, you know, the Dr. Evil to swoop in and give you an answer back faster than Google's public DNS answers could get to you, which is why, you know, ideally you're running that DNS resolver as close to you as possible. Maybe, you know, even down to running it on your own machine or on the edge of your network. Because the closer you can run it to where your applications are, or even in the application itself, like the Bloodhound web browser I was talking about that runs it in the application itself, or in the mail servers that run it right inside their own the application, then, you know, the zone for the attacker to jump in is much smaller. Wes, you want to say something, I could tell, because you're standing there.
Actually, the mail server in question requires a local resolver. But anyway, you know, the important thing is that I think if you look 20 years down the line, that you'll find a lot of our applications will do validation right in the application, or they'll have a trusted link to their local resolver where they can get error codes. And it actually brings up a really valid point, going back to the woman in the back who asked about user interface and how can you detect things. Well, right now you just get an error. But we have a validating library, and there's a few other validating libraries out there that you can put directly in your application, and then all of a sudden you get all of the diagnostics for exactly why an error happened, what happened because of it, and you can actually present that to the user, and more than just saying it failed, you can tell them why it failed. So I think if we look 20 years down the line, we're slowly pushing validation closer and closer into every application, DNSSEC or other security technology. It's all happening in the end.
May I?
Okay. Yeah.
I use Tor sometimes to. Would that have any protection or any ways to that? No, not really, isn't it?
Yeah, Tor doesn't provide authentication, so you're still going to have to do the same security protocols, down to your laptop, mm-hmm. No matter what tunneling mechanism you're using, right? You could tunnel all your traffic over SSH, over VPNs, over Tor. It really doesn't matter. At some point, you have to make the decision on your laptop, is what I asked secure or not? And then you have to have all the pieces to make that decision. So you still need it in your laptop in that case.
So the gentleman in the back has been up there.
Yeah, this is Fawaz from Pakistan. I'm a first-time ICANN fellow. My question is, what happens if the website does not exist? I mean, there is no record in the DNS, and then the response that will come back from the DNS, I mean, how is it going to be signed? Maybe someone can just say that this website is not registered. So what is the procedure for that?
Sure. So part of DNSSEC is, part of it is this idea that you assert that records do exist and are the correct ones coming out of there. There's also the assertion that they don't exist, which is this whole thing we talked about with NSEC, NSEC 3, the way these records are there, that if the website didn't exist, you would get back a signed assertion from the resolver that site really doesn't exist. It's a signed, so you would know that. So if an attacker, all right, let me walk through this quickly. If an attacker were to remove an entry in some way, but they didn't change didn't have access to the signatures, you'd have the same kind of thing. They'd be coming back saying, no, it doesn't exist. But say, wait, you're not signed. Get out of here. And then it would wait to get a query back that would say, no, here is the real record. So DNSSEC does provide protection against that through the signatures to ensure that it is there.
But how would you get the signature of the website?
So what would happen is you're querying for, research.bigbang.com, whatever else, something like that. And it goes out there, and it would come back telling you that site does not exist and giving you a signature to say, it really, I am telling you, and I'm signing that it doesn't exist. Russ, you want to?
Yeah, let me explain it this way. The normal DNS response for something like that it doesn't exist, is you don't really know if it doesn't exist. DNS comes back and said, I couldn't find it. You might try again a little bit. Maybe it'll work. Maybe it won't. DNSSEC says, no, it's not there. So that's an increased functionality that you get with DNSSEC. Definitively gives you an answer about something that does not exist.
Right, that's what it says. You know that. I saw some other questions floating on here. This gentleman, yes.
Actually, I have the same question.
Oh, okay.
I want to add something. You said that a solution would be to have your own recursive DNS, but this cannot be a global solution for all users. Unless the DNS server is included in your browser or in the operating system. So is there any effort towards this kind of solutions?
So I think there's a couple answers, and one is that we're starting to see DNSSEC validation being brought down into operating systems. For instance, Fedora, in the next version of Fedora that's coming out, will have DNSSEC validation enabled by default. Now, granted, that means you might run Fedora on your laptop or something, but if you did, you would then have DNSSEC validation happening there on your laptop. Now, it might be that you might run that on the server, on your home, the server gateway that runs on the edge of your network, and so again, you'll have that there. So I think what we've seen in kind of the path of validation has been it started out doing DNSSEC validation at the ISP networks and at things like Google's public DNS and other places like that. And then we're slowly moving it down and down and down. Wes mentioned that applications now have this library that they can use. And that's in. There's one on the DNSSEC tools. There's another one called the GetDNS API that's been pushed. It's been developed by VeriSign Labs and NLNet Labs that provides a DNSSEC validation that can be built right into applications. So more and more of these tools are coming out so that people can do that in the application. So I think as we see that, you know, some of the largest mail servers are now having that, you know, that the DNSSEC validation happening as part of that. So we're seeing it pushed down in that space. And that's the evolution that I think we'll continue to have as more and more of this rolls out. Russ.
Yeah, I was being a little sloppy in my terminology, which I hate to do, because I did say a recursive resolver, and that's right. But that's where the recursive resolver is actually doing validation. And the most important aspect is actually doing the validation, whether it's on the laptop or in an application that's running on the laptop. And there's more clever ways that are being looked at and put out there that allows you may be doing the recursive resolver on your own machine, but you may be able to take advantage of recursives around you, because the thing about DNSSEC that's very important, it was an early design decision made, is that it's the data itself that you're validating. So as long as you get the set of data that you need, whether you're doing the recursive lookup or you're using some other machine, you can do the validation. And that's the important thing, is to do the validation as close to the actual end use as possible.
I've got time for a couple more questions. So I've seen this gentleman, anyone else is in the back? Okay, so all right.
Hi, my name is Saeed, and I'm representing the civil society from Afghanistan. You said that 77% of the TLDs are using DNSSEC. Can you tell me, like, who are the major parties in the 23% of the remaining? And how long will it take to raise the number? And what sort of collaboration are you expecting or requiring from them?
So to be clear, the stages for a top-level domain to be or for people to use DNSSEC is that the TLD has to be signed. And then at that point, second-level domains can be signed, and they'll all work in this chain of trust that goes on there. So if I had my slides for Wednesday, I could show you my – or Julie, actually, could we pull up the – no, you know what? We're running out of time to do that. But I could show you. And actually, if you look on the back here, I think it says – there's a link for the DNSSEC deployment maps are on here. You can see a picture there of where the CCTLDs are that still are not in, that are in that 23%. I mean, a lot of them are in Africa, South America, some parts of Asia in different places that are there. And what we're doing to help that is a couple of different activities. One is ICANN has this training program that they are going around. And in fact, if you're with a CCTLD, they will come to your location and do DNSSEC training for you for free, actually, if you get a number of people that will go and do that. They'll go and do that. And Rick Lamb is somebody who you can talk to about that. We're also, on the Internet Society side, trying to provide tutorials and documentation and work to help CCTLDs with that as well. And some of the vendors are also providing materials as well to help people through that process. So that's where Jacques has some maps he could show you there that will show you some of those things. All right.
Hello there. My name is Kai Hendry. I work for a software company called Web Converge, and we create an operating system. So I'm very interested in sort of integrating a DNS resolver. But your earlier example, the skip with Comcast doing that DNSSEC stuff, that sounded perhaps a better place to do it, because you can do it faster and with less complexity on the client side. But I didn't understand how do I know as a user using an ISP that the ISP's DNS service is DNSSEC enabled?
Right. How do you know if they're performing the validation? And the answer is that you're not going to... What?
There's no automated...
Yeah, you're not going to know. Well, you know, you're going to go and send you're going to tell them that I want to know what is, you know, www.ietf.org, and they're going to come back to you and give you a or they're going to give you an answer that's signed or not. And well, actually, they're not going to, they're going to give you an answer. You're not going to know whether the validation happened or not, which is why the, you know, if you do the validation in your app, you can know a bit more about that, and you can know the
error. I'm assuming if I do it on the client side, obviously more complexity right. for me.
Sure.
But the thing that I was thinking a lot about is surely this is going to take a longer time to do it. I mean, is there any, like, how much longer time is this going to be? Or is there any, like...
You mean as far as to do the validation within the application?
Yeah,
or,
like,
or
is it, are we talking, like, second, or what is it going to be? Or
I don't know. As far as the amount of time it would take to do the extra validation inside of an application with a library? Or?
So there's a few extra round trips that you need to do, but for most of it, it will be in your cache really quickly because all the paths from the root down to, you know, via.com and all the TLDs down, you will have cached already. So you only need a little bit of extra records. And some of them you get for free because when you're asking the query, they come back with the signatures already. So it's not an extra round trip. But sometimes you might have to do a few extra round trips to look up the DNS keys and some other records to prove the path all the way to the root. Okay. But in the end, it's very little delay. Of course, for a browser, every millisecond is a large delay, and they don't want it. So it all depends on who you're asking.
Okay. Last question I saw was... Okay? Yes.
So, hello, everyone. I'm Awal. I'm a first-time fellow from Bangladesh. So our organization has a domain bdren.net.bd. But .bd is not yet implemented the DNSSEC. I know that we can have some third parties, so we can get the signatures and everything. We can connect to, and I mean logically peer with them. But is it secure to do that? I mean .net.bd. .bd is not ready. And we want to implement the DNSSEC in our organizations. So for parent, we can choose the third party. Is it secure? Thank you.
So you can still sign your domain underneath .bd, even if it's not, even if .bd is not signed. You can still sign your domain. You can still test that. You can do that. The thing is that the full validation in the chain of trust can't be done until .bd does that. There's a great tool called the DNSSEC Analyzer, which is from VeriSign Labs, right? Is that the one I'm thinking of? Well, okay, or Sandia. There's two different ones. But they'll show you a nice little chart that will show you with little green dots and little red dots that will show you where the validation breaks down. And so, you know, for a while, for instance, one of my own domains, I had signed it on my DNS operator, but the top level domain wouldn't accept, they were actually signed, but they wouldn't accept DS records from me, which provides the linkage. And so for quite a while, you know, my domain was signed, but people couldn't fully validate it. And then they did accept that I was able to go and do that and it would work on that. Yes, Russ.
Yeah, and I'd like to add that for those folks that are interested in proceeding with doing DNSSEC, even before their TLD gets signed, I would strongly encourage doing that because one of the things that makes a difference is you're putting a few more steps and processes involved in your overall DNS operation. And it's from just not disturbing or breaking anything perspective, it's much better to build your system, start doing the DNSSEC signing of your zone prior to anyone depending upon it being signed. That way, if you do have problems with a key rollover, or if you do have problems with some version of the name server on one of your authoritative servers not taking DNSSEC, you'll find that out prior to anyone really being dependent on it from a security perspective. So it's a very good idea to start practicing and start running this as early as possible.
So with that, Julie, do we have any questions in the remote room? No? Okay. Well, I want to say thank you very much for being here, for coming all the way here. We are still around for a few more minutes if you'd like to talk to any of us individually. And please do take a look at these resources that are out there. And if you're interested in much more about this, feel free to come back on Wednesday. You can look online and see the agenda to know what we're going to be talking about at different points in time. And you're welcome to join us then. Thank you very much.